Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York's United States Senator and Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer.
If they say, or Chuck, which do you prefer?
Chuck.
You do?
Yes. Can I tell a story?
Please.
Slightly off color. It's okay.
Oh, yeah.
So we had an Uncle Charlie on my father's side. My mom wanted to name me Charles. They both did. But my mom hated Uncle Charlie, said only if he's Chuck. So I've never been Charlie. I was Chuck from birth, although my mother, 90 years old, still calls me Chucky. She calls me up. You know, she still follows what's going on. Chucky, you should be doing this.
Really?
Okay, but Chuck was my name. So when I was 5 years old, I ran up the stairs of our house happy as could be. I said, Mommy, Mommy, I found out. My name rhymes with luck. Then when I was 8 years old, I ran up the stairs of
That's
our house
funny.
Crying. I found out what else it rhymed with. But it's quite something to be a Chuck. In the fifth grade, PS 197 in Brooklyn. The lead song on the hit parade was called The Name Game by Mary Ellis. Mary Berry, Bo Berry, Banana Fanta.
Sure.
Well, the whole fifth grade was Chuck, Chuck, Bo Buck, Banana.
Yeah, fill it in.
And so I tell people having the name Chuck is like the Johnny Cash song, A Boy Named Sue.
Yeah.
In other words, it makes you tough. Because always use your name for rhyming things. I'm happy to be Chuck.
Did you have to beat people up like he did, Sue?
Well, I had my share of, you know, we used to have street, you know, it's not like vicious, but fighting, sure.
Sure.
In those days.
Yeah, and you lived in Brooklyn. Now you live in Manhattan, right?
No, Brooklyn all the way. First senator from Brooklyn in something like 180 years.
Oh, well, that is impressive.
True to Brooklyn.
So I was sitting with them.
And wait, I want to let people in on one secret. There's a couple of pictures on his wall where he's not wearing a hat. Alan Chartok with a longer head of hair in his younger days. Now let's get to work.
Okay, so I had Governor Cuomo on with us for 35, 40 minutes. And I asked him, I said, well, Chuck Schumer is coming in, and, you know, he comes in unlike you, does it on the phone. And I said, he said,
I'd like to see you, Alan.
He said, so that I can see his wrinkles.
I don't see them even here. You're lighting.
No, his wrinkles.
Oh, his wrinkles.
That's why he was coming. Okay, so he said, of course, about, you know, state and local deduction, and he says, killing New York State. And he said, you should lie down on the Senate floor and kick and scream until they do something about this.
I guarantee, I'm sure he was being figurative. He knows how the Senate works. We can filibuster, but only for 30 hours, you know, unless you'd have enough people. And no matter what we do in the Senate on state and local, the president would veto it. Now, let me first agree with the governor. State and local is awful for New York. It is a dagger to our heart. Yes, we fought it in the tax bill as strongly as we could. Every Democrat voted against the tax bill, but they put it through by something called reconciliation, which means the filibuster doesn't apply. You can lay on the floor for as long as you want. You can't stop it. But the answer, we're going to do everything we can, and we're going to tell them if they want certain things on the tax bill, we'd like to do some of the undoing of state and local. We'll see where that heads.
Is that your highest? I mean,
on taxes, yes.
Right.
Absolutely. There are a lot of high priorities. I mean, you know, climate change is a high priority.
Sure.
Income inequality is a high priority. Voting rights is a high priority. But on taxes, nothing. And it's one of the reasons I'm working so hard to get back the majority in the Senate. Then we can do the same thing, reconciliation, if we had to deal with state and local. That's a possibility.
So let's go there. What are your chances, Senator, of taking back? I mean, very exciting. There's an ancillary question about impeachment, but what are your chances of taking?
Okay, well, let me just say first, it is so important this time to take back the Senate.
Right.
Now, obviously, one won the presidency, and that is probably the most important thing. But even if we win the presidency, and I think the odds are greater than half we do, Democrats, even if we keep the House, the odds are like 90% we'll keep the House, barring some cataclysm the other way. If we don't have the Senate, two very bad things will happen. One, Mitch McConnell will block everything that the new Democratic president tries to do, just as he did once he got the majority under President Obama. Nothing happened.
Including one very important Supreme Court judge.
And that's second. He will, you know, it's 51 votes for the Supreme Court. No filibuster for that either. And he will block any presidential appointment to the Supreme Court. My guess is for 1 year, 2 years. I mean, amazingly enough, McConnell said in a New York Times profile of him a few months ago, the proudest thing he did was withhold Merrick Garland. And so it's vital to take back the Senate. Now, in answer to your question, so I hope there'll be a rallying cry. Last time in the election, it was take back the House. We needed it. It was easier to take back the House than take back the Senate, given the Senate map. Much.
And how about the Senate?
This time the Senate is not easier to keep than the House, but much better than last time. Here's why. In the last Senate map, you know, it's a third of the senators, and this was just how it turned out. Third of the senators every 2 years are elected. This is how it turned out. We had 10 senators running in states that Trump won. We had 5 senators running in states that Trump won by 20 or more. Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia, Montana, and Missouri.
You're good.
We lost 3 but kept 2 of those. We picked up 2 other seats, and then the big surprise was we lost Florida by a tiny little bit. This time, we only have 1 Democratic senator running in a Trump state, which is Alabama. And they have a whole bunch of senators in purple states up. So is it a lot easier than, is it going to be easy? No, it never is in the Senate because the rural states get the same number of senators as the bigger states. But is it a lot easier than last time? Yes. And I hope there'll be a cry from one end of the country to the other, not only win the presidency, not only keep the House, but at the very top of the list, take back the Senate.
So how many you got?
We have 47 now.
Yeah.
And we have 6 or 7 of Republicans running for re-election in vulnerable states.
And you need, what, 4?
We need 3 with a president. But if we lose Alabama, and I don't know if we will, but in case we do, because that's the one tough state, we need 4.
Wow. And you think you'll get them?
I think if the odds are much higher than last time, yeah.
Okay. So I've got a minute and 58 seconds on left on this wonderful opportunity with you. So what happens is the moment that will be in posterity forever is you sitting there and Nancy Pelosi sitting there and the president sitting there. That is the image that will be engraved.
Well, you know, the last time we had a Democratic president, a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, was the time we did things for people, for middle class people. We improved health care dramatically with the ACA. We reformed Wall Street to a decent extent, not as far as many might want to go, in the Dodd-Frank. We rescued the country and built a lot of infrastructure, which is still being built, some of the projects. We did things. And then in 2010, we lost not the Senate, but the House. And that was it. Then we lost the Senate a few years later. And they just blockaded everything. So if you remember, the last time we had all 3, we got something done. If you have 2 of the 3 or 1 of the 3, you can't get much done.
But as the old saying goes in our community, from your lips to God's ear.
Amen. As they say in many communities.
As they say in many communities. We don't want to get trapped on that one. There is the possibility, you think, of taking it back.
Oh, yeah. It's a good possibility. It's a good possibility, and we're working hard, and we're getting good candidates coming forward.
Our guest is Chuck Schumer, Charles Schumer, and I'm impressed by your mother's longevity. May you have it, too.
Listen to this. My dad is 95.
No.
Praise God. My mom is 90. Praise God. And on April 3rd, our whole family is getting together, God willing, to celebrate their 70th anniversary.
Wow. Okay. So there you are. You were sitting on a couch. Nancy Pelosi was sitting across from you. The president. The famous meeting. And when anybody thinks of anything having to do with this, they're going to think of that picture, right?
Yes. Right. Well, it was first Nancy and I, and we get along great. We're very close. Went into that meeting and said, we're going to speak truth to power. No one tells this guy the truth. No one tells him what's really going on along the southern border or whatever. So many of his staff people are either hard-right ideologues, so they don't see the truth, or they're sycophants. They just want to yes him to death, whatever he does. You go into a meeting with him, you see them all nodding their heads.
Yep.
The vice president was known to nod his head in that meeting, even though all that happened. We didn't know the press would be called in. That was Trump. Remember, he said, let's have the press stay in. And I knew.
He thought they, he was going to get better.
I knew that I could confront him with the fact that he wants to shut down the government. And so we went back and forth for a little while, and then I did. And I said, you've said it 25 times. Here's what you said. I'd be proud to shut down the government. It's your shutdown, Mr. President, if you do this. Now, please don't. And he fell right, you know, he went right for it. He said, I'd be proud to shut down the government. Yes, it's my shutdown, and I'm not going to blame you. Of course, typical of Donald Trump, he reversed himself, did a 180-degree turn, said the opposite of
what
he said. Too late. But it was too late. The only thing I knew I should keep a very serious face, but it was so amazing that I had a little bit of a smile around the corner of my lips, which my friends and supporters commented to me. But it was an amazing moment. And from that moment on, we knew we would win the shutdown. Because the history is whoever wants the shutdown usually loses it, because the American people, in their wisdom, their very good wisdom, say we shouldn't shut down the government, and they blame the party who wants to do it for whatever purpose.
Well, when they do it again, if they do it again, you think he's got the whatever?
No, well, here's what happened. The Republican Party, the House and Senate Republican leaders, who generally go along with Trump even when they know he's wrong, they're afraid of him. He controls that Republican Party now, for better or for worse. I would say clearly for worse for the Republican Party, speaking not as a member, of course. But on this one, when the shutdown went on 3 weeks, they saw that their numbers, their popularity, the president's popularity was plummeting. And so McConnell came to me and said, well, how do we end this? And I gave him the plan to end it, which was to do the appropriations bills through the appropriations, what's called conference committee, the four appropriate chiefs, you know, Democratic, Republican, House and Senate appropriators, come to a deal, and the four of us would look over it. And we did. And they basically told Trump, veto this if you dare. So my view, Mr. Chartok, is that they will not do it again. They, you know, the next chance would be September.
But he's a little crazy.
No, I think if he tries, the Republicans say, we're going to override you right away.
I see.
Because they lost so much ground.
Do you get along with McConnell on any level? I think I keep putting him on my list of the world's three worst people, and I was wondering whether you get along with him.
I have to try to get along with him, and there are certain things we try to get done, but he's almost always with Trump. The most recent, he knew that this emergency was a very, very bad thing. Not just the emergency itself, bad enough as that was. It changes the whole balance of power. Because the Founding Fathers, one of the things they were most afraid of was an overreaching executive who had too much power. So they put checks and balances, and the number one power they gave to Congress was what they call the power of the purse, the ability to spend money. Okay? Trump was trying to go around that. He couldn't get his wall. First, Mexico, of course, is not paying for it, as he promised. But even within the Congress, when he had a Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican president, he couldn't get his wall because most people know what a bad idea it is. So he tried and tried and tried, and then he declares an emergency. That is not what emergencies are about. And he it would have changed the fundamental balance of power. Mitch McConnell, and he'll go down in history badly for this, among other things, he said that he'd go along with Trump. And that is the problem with the Republican leadership. Some of the most principled conservatives, you know, like a George Will, like a Crystal, who I have never agreed with, have broken with Trump because they know how inimical he is to conservative principles. But the Republican senators and Congress members almost always go along. Why? Because he threatens them with primaries.
No question.
We just had one at Tillis.
Yeah.
Was going to vote with us. He's hurt himself badly in North Carolina, I believe. But he was going to vote to say that, to override the emergency.
He wrote a column about it.
Yes, and they challenged him in a primary. And he backed off. They're afraid.
Okay, very quickly, Nancy Pelosi, your partner, as you say, in all of this, has announced there should not be an impeachment effort yet. I happen to agree with that. I think she's 100% right. I get an awful lot of garbage from my fellow Democrats who
and
I have
some legitimate objections, I suppose. Not just garbage, even if you don't agree.
You think so? Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, so let's assume that that's the case. Is she right that there shouldn't be?
My view is very simple. What I've said all along, and I will say to you now, we should wait for Mueller. We shouldn't prejudge. We should wait for Mueller. And I think that's what Speaker Pelosi was saying as well. In other words, let's wait and read the whole report. Now, she set up some conditions that the report would have to meet, but I'm not setting up any conditions at this point. All I'm saying is, let's see what the Mueller report has. The one thing I do say, no one should interfere with it, how it is issued, in other words.
Will you get it?
And no one should stop it from being made public.
Will you get it?
I think we will get it sooner or later.
How do you do that?
Well, if Barr, the attorney general, I did not support, I called Barr into my office. I said, give me a commitment. You'll make the whole report, other than redactions to protect intelligence sources, public. And he wouldn't. And I said, then I cannot vote for you. So I'm not sure he will. He's waffled. You know, he said he thinks it should. He believes in transparency. That's not good enough to just say that. But I think if we go to court, we'll win. Remember, that's what happened in the last big precedent for that was with Nixon. And he wouldn't turn over the tapes.
But there were tapes.
And there were tapes. And he wouldn't turn them over like there's a report. And the day before, they told him, the Supreme Court's going to decide against you 9-0, and he turned them over, and there was the gap, and that was that.
So very quickly, Senator Gillibrand, your colleague, who I think, what do I know about these things, but I think you recommended for the job.
I did.
Yeah.
To Governor Patterson. I first called her. I said, are you interested? I thought an upstate woman would be a very good addition. We didn't have any upstate or statewide. We didn't have any women.
You and D'Amato. D'Amato was
standing backed her later.
He was standing on the other side of her.
Yeah, when she was, but that was a month or so after all of the back and forth.
Yeah, well, I almost lost
I wouldn't give him that much credit, that's all.
Well, I don't want to. I just almost lost my cookies. So this would give you a chance right now to say, okay, she's from our state. I had her appointed, or I helped to have her appointed, so I'm going to support her presidential bid. I'm going to endorse her.
Well, first, I think she does a great job. We work very well together. But I have said, and I'm continuing to say, I'm not commenting on the presidential race at this time. The only thing I've said is let 1,000 flowers bloom. Let's see who the strongest candidate is against Donald Trump, because we have to beat him. And I don't know who it is, but I do believe this, Alan. I think the electorate will choose the candidate they think is the strongest to beat Trump.
Here we are, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, soon to become the Majority Leader of the United States Senate. How important is that to you? That's pretty
well, to
seminal.
Me, you know, minority leaders are a good job, and I work very hard at it, and I work closely with my colleagues. We have great unity in our caucus. I have a leadership team. We meet every Monday night. And who's on the team? Bernie and Elizabeth and Joe Manchin and Mark Warner, two of the most liberal senators in our caucus and most conservative. We talk things through. We find out each other's viewpoint, and we come to a consensus. And that strength has allowed us to succeed in preserving health care, in showing what a horrible bill the tax bill was, in getting two budgets, and in, most recently, in winning the shutdown. So the unity is great, and that's an important job. But being majority leader is more important in the sense of the good for the country. Two words, Supreme Court clinches it, but also blockade. We will help get things done like we did, as I mentioned, the last time that we had House and Senate. You know, look, one of the greatest problems this country faces is maldistribution of income. That so much of the wealth and so much of the income goes to the very wealthiest. And the middle class is stagnating, and it's harder for the poor to get to the middle class. The last time something real was done for these folks was when we had the House, Senate, and presidency. We passed ACA. We limited some of the, you know, banks and financial institutions from doing stuff. We passed a lot of money for infrastructure, which created a lot of jobs. And so we need to do that again to deal with income distribution. Donald Trump talked like a populist when he ran.
He did.
But he is behaving like a hard right, just help the powerful. So it's very important.
Okay.
because we don't need a blockade. We don't, even if we get a Democratic president, McConnell, the Republicans will block everything he does as they did when Obama was president.
Climate change, Chuck, you know, to many of us, this could be the end of the world as we know it.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, will you see any light at the end of the tunnel here?
Yeah. Well, here's what we're doing. In the Senate, of course, the Republicans control. And Mitch McConnell wants to put the Green New Deal as a vote, and they'll all vote against it. That's, you know, a stunt. Mitch McConnell and the Republicans haven't put a single thing on the floor of the Senate since he's been majority leader to deal with climate change. Nothing. So we are turning it on him and going on offense. So we have a resolution signed by all 47 Democrats, even those among the more conservative of the or more moderate of the Democrats, that simply says three things. It says resolved. One, climate change is real. Two, climate change is caused by human activity. Three, Congress should do something immediate and bold to deal with this crisis. And not a single Republican has signed on yet. We are asking people right now across the country to write, call, email, tweet, do whatever they do, picket. There's Republican senators. If they can't even say that, where are they? And when this came up 3-4 years ago, it came up on the floor in a late night vote. There wasn't much preparation. Five senators, and it didn't even have Congress should act. It just said climate change is real, caused by human activity. Only five Republicans voted for it, and two of them are gone. One, John McCain, who passed away, and one, Kelly Ayotte.
What do you think about that John McCain insult by the president?
I think it's outrageous. I agree with Senator Coons. He's a hero. He's passed away. Donald Trump has no compunction. He almost lives by insult and ego. I don't know a single president in all our history who thinks the government should just be an extension of his ego and what's good for him. This guy does. It's awful.
Coming closer to home, we're having a huge chemical pollution problem.
PFAS.
Yeah, and you know, you got Newburgh, Hoosick Falls, Petersburg. How can
don't
we
forget Long Island?
Long Island. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
What can you get done?
So the head of EPA, Pruitt, totally in the pocket of the special interests in industry, as is his successor. But we did push the successor, first Pruitt and then the successor, to set what's called a maximum contaminant level for all the PFAS chemicals, PFOA, PFAS. And they're supposed to do that by September. Once that happens, then there has to be cleanups and other kinds of things. In the meantime, when the military has been at fault, I've tried to get them to get involved. So we have the Air Force. What happened to Newburgh and they lost their whole water supply is because they were near what was then Stewart Air Force Base, now Stewart Airport. And they used these firefighting foam that was loaded with these chemicals, and it got into the whole water supply. I was there at this reservoir right near Stewart that supplied all of Newburgh, and they have to now pay for New York City water. Hoosick Falls, a little different because the PFAS and PFOA were put in by a company. Now it's Saint-Gobain. I think it was once Honeywell. And again, if we have an MCL, they could be forced to pay for everything.
I got one more question real quick.
So it's important to do. I'm pushing hard. We're making some progress, although they're not moving fast enough.
The Democrats took the state Senate. There's a talk that the governor, the assembly, and they're not getting along. Do you have any words of wisdom for them about how important it is?
Well, the most important thing is to get things done for people. And, you know, I always believe, particularly when the one party controls all three, in this case, I'm glad it's the Democratic Party, coming to an agreement is a very important thing. Showing the legislature respect is a very important thing. And I hope they can all come together.
We are out of time. Our guest has been New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer. Chuck Schumer, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.